From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Jennifer Mitchell with the news on this day in Maine, Friday, May 7th, 2021.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners and by the Maine law firm of Eaton Peabody, serving generations of Maine families and businesses from offices in Augusta, Bangor, Brunswick, Ellsworth, and Portland.
Another person has died, and 288 more people in Maine have tested positive for COVID-19. More than 63,400 cases have been confirmed by the Maine CDC since the start of the pandemic. 48% of the state's population has received a first dose of the vaccine. 42% are fully vaccinated. According to NPR's vaccine tracker, that's the highest percentage in the U.S. Maine Health is shifting its vaccine strategy to focus on inoculating young Mainers who make up the majority of the unvaccinated population. The health system will shut down one of its largest mass vaccination sites in Scarborough on May 20th as demand starts to wane, with much of the 60 and older population already vaccinated. Now registration for 12 to 15-year-olds is open in anticipation of the expected FDA approval of the Pfizer vaccine for that age group sometime next week. Maine Health is working with school districts to set up in-school vaccination clinics. The first sites will open up at two high schools in Oxford County next week. Well, Governor Janet Mills is proposing $140 million worth of bonds for transportation improvements and land conservation. That includes $40 million over 4 years to conserve land through the Land for Maine's Future program in honor of the late director of the Sportsmen's Alliance of Maine, George Smith. Another $100 million would go to maintain and upgrade transportation systems. The sum is smaller than Mills originally discussed due to the arrival of federal stimulus money, which the governor intends to use to meet some of her objectives. Maine could become one of the first states to ban the sale of flavored tobacco products under a bill that's now before the legislature. The ban would extend to products such as menthol cigarettes, mint chewing tobacco, and electronic cigarettes as well. The Maine CDC and other health groups are supporting the ban. They say that teens can easily be hooked on e-cigarettes that are made to taste like gummy bears or Pop-Tarts, and that the problem has worsened in recent years. Dr. Alyssa Goodwin, a pediatrician from Brunswick, spoke in support of the ban during a public hearing today. She said that reports of cigarette use are rare among her teenage patients, but a majority of them have said that they or someone they know use e-cigarettes.
My high school students speak of needing to avoid using the restroom because of the rampant uncontrolled vape use. And so while in my practice I've seen that combustible nicotine products use is almost unthinkable to the teens I see, they do not bat an eyelash when asked about vaping because in their world it is everywhere.
A number of convenience store owners have come out against the bill. They argue that the ban would hurt businesses around Maine. More than 200 students at Bates staged a protest today, demanding that the Lewiston College defund and disarm campus safety officers. They say an incident in March highlighted systemic problems, and as Patty White reports, now they don't even want safety officers to carry handcuffs.
Can everybody hear me?
The students walked out of classes at 1 o'clock and stood outside of Lane Hall, wearing masks and dressed in black. Junior Ashka Javeri spoke first. She denounced what she described as Bates' stalled reaction to an incident on March 5th in which a campus safety officer tackled and handcuffed a student who had been drinking alcohol in a residence hall and refused to identify himself. The officer was later fired. Javeri says a similar incident happened in 2017 to a black student, but there have been no substantive changes to campus safety. She listed the steps that were supposed to be taken after a campus safety investigation 4 years ago.
Introduce community engagement programs designed to strengthen relationships and build trust between officers and students. Is there trust?
No!
More than 500 Bates students have signed a petition demanding that campus safety officers be prohibited from carrying batons and handcuffs. They also want Bates to abandon an idea that was initially put forth by students to consider equipping safety officers with body cameras. Students like senior Muskan Verma, who's on the school's Equity and Inclusion Committee, say campus safety needs to be completely restructured.
I'm tired of having to put band-aids on every little thing that goes wrong. I think it's time we need to kind of pull it all out and start building again.
Verma says she's had productive discussions with Bates administrators about shifting away from filling campus safety positions with people with law enforcement backgrounds to people with social work backgrounds who are trained at de-escalating situations. Bates Vice President for Campus Life, Joshua McIntosh, responded to the students' petition in an email earlier this week. He agreed that the current model is not working well and said the use of batons was being immediately suspended. The school is also considering the students' other demands as it awaits the results of an outside assessment of its campus safety program. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
Well, the Butler Conservation Fund announced the opening this week of its second large-scale project to provide outdoor recreation in wild and scenic locations in Maine. Known as Cobbs Cook Shores, the latest project includes areas along the southern and western shores of Cobbs Cook Bay. And as Susan Sharon reports, the hope is that it might eventually draw some tourists away from heavily trafficked Acadia National Park.
Encompassing 500 acres across a series of coastal parklands, Cobbs Cook Shores is modest in size. But Carl Carlson, director of parklands for the Butler Conservation Fund, says the shorefront properties are stunning, and there are opportunities for hiking, biking, boating, and skiing.
This is intended to be a dispersed set of parks. So there are a few that are close to each other, but in most cases, you have to go in between them either by biking or driving. And we encourage outdoor aerobic recreation, so we want people to come up and bike. We're hoping that this will be a popular biking destination.
Because Cobbs Cook Shores is only a couple of hours' drive from Acadia National Park, Carlson says the project may serve as an alternative or bonus destination for those who want to enjoy the great outdoors in Downeast Maine.
So go to Acadia, get that experience. But then when you want to have some time to yourself away from the crowds, you come to Cobbs Cook Shores.
The parklands are free to use and include 14 miles of scenic shorefront, 8 miles of biking and walking trails, several hand-carry boat launches, camping areas, vault toilets, screen pavilions, and picnic spots. The Butler Conservation Fund has also protected wilderness areas in Chile, Argentina, the Adirondacks in New York, coastal areas of South Carolina and Georgia, and the North Woods of Maine. More information about the Cobbs Cook Shores parklands can be found at cobbscookshores.org. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
Well, the Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association, MOFGA, has announced plans to go ahead with an in-person fair for its signature event, the Common Ground Country Fair.
Of course, the CDC has given us some really wonderful sanitation guidelines and data-driven, mandates for us to follow.
Fair Director April Boucher says plans are still in progress, but the fair will be reshaped a bit to allow for social distancing. Face coverings will be mandated and additional sanitation stations will be provided. And she says the fair will develop demonstrations that allow for adequate spacing of onlookers. Since 1977, the event, now held in Unity, has billed itself as a celebration of rural living and typically attracts more than 60,000 people over the course of 3 days. Last year, the pandemic forced the fair to present a scaled-down virtual event, but Boucher says a survey this year signaled overwhelming support for an in-person fair. Still, she says it's not clear if there will be enough volunteers to pull it off.
It takes over 2,000 volunteers to make the Common Ground Country Fair a success, and especially this year to make it a safe event.
The fair is currently planned for September 24th through the 26th. You're listening to This Day in Maine. When Castine residents go to town meeting tomorrow, they'll be asked whether the town should consider seeking a name change for two islands whose murky history is raising some questions about race and white privilege. Fred Bever reports.
Upper Negro Island and Lower Negro Island lie near the Castine side of the Bagaduce River across from Brooksville. Johanna Barrett, who owns Compass Rose Books in Castine, says she and others started trying to find out more when, inspired by Maine's recent bicentennial, they began delving into the town's history.
The islands were probably stopping points for free Black loyalists prior to the American Revolutionary War, but that hasn't been established firmly.
Barrett says the names have been dated back to at least 1830, and the islands may have been settled by Black people in the maritime trades or served as a way station of some sort.
But because we have told the history of these places and of our state from the dominant narrative of white colonial settlers, we haven't kept good record of or maintained the stories from either Indigenous peoples or from Black people.
Barrett is hopeful that much more will be learned should the town vote to consider a name change, and after a second vote, to propose that to the United States Geological Survey. Michael Alpert, president of the Greater Bangor Area NAACP, says it's a necessary endeavor, and the island's names should not be seen as benign.
Negro is a specifically racist term, and it really has no place in our culture.
Alpert says Americans who grew up during the Civil Rights era may not quite get that. Martin Luther King Jr., after all, used the term. But that was an artifact of an age that lacked better language, Alpert says, while the appellation goes back much farther.
The word Negro is specifically linked to slavery. African Americans who were enslaved were called Negroes. But Africans were called Africans. They were referred to by their geography.
If you want to find the islands on a map, try an older DeLorme atlas or a navigation chart. With Google Maps, you might have some trouble. Barrett says until last month, the islands were labeled by Google Maps with their historic titles. But sometime in recent weeks, Google appears to have removed the names altogether. Google officials did not respond to requests for comment. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
And it's time now for Maine's Political Pulse, our weekly roundup of state politics and government.
Welcome to Maine's Political Pulse. I'm Erwin Gratz, joined today by Maine Public's chief political correspondent, Steve Mistler. Long ago, Senator Everett Dirksen once famously compared $1 billion to real money. Well, Maine is going to get about $1 billion from the latest federal pandemic aid bill passed in March. And this past week, Governor Mills outlined how she wants to turn that $1 billion into real things for Maine people. Steve, what did that outline look like?
Well, Erwin, if anyone was paying attention to the 10-year economic plan that Governor Mills rolled out before the pandemic, or even the pandemic recovery plan that she released later last year, then they'll be pretty familiar with the proposal she unveiled this week. This proposal is essentially a combination of the previous two. And at the time, those plans were viewed as mostly aspirational because there was no money. Now there is. And that's because of the American Rescue Plan from the Biden administration. Mills's proposal is basically divided into three parts. The first part is immediate COVID relief programs. The second is longer-term economic investments, and then the third is infrastructure spending. I won't go too deeply into the weeds on the specifics because a lot of these initiatives were presented in a fact sheet and they're not legislation yet. Like everything, the devil is in the details, and in this case, the details are likely to change somewhat because this bill will be presented to the legislature, and the legislature will take it from there.
Now, we've said before that Washington has yet to fully detail the rules for how this federal aid should be spent. So is that going to generate some changes down the road in this governor's plan?
It could, but I think this slug of money is about $1.3 billion, which is just a slice of the $4 billion or so that Maine is receiving from the American Rescue Plan. The bulk of that money from the American Rescue Plan is essentially spoken for. It's targeted for specific initiatives set forth by the federal legislation. This tranche of funds is discretionary money, meaning that policymakers in Augusta will decide how it's spent. This is essentially the governor's proposal to the legislature on how to do that.
All right, so the legislature is going to have a role in this as well. Any idea how they may try to modify it?
Democrats control the legislature, and while they certainly might have some different ideas than the governor about how to spend this money, they also have an electoral interest in delivering her at least some of what she's asking for. Governor Mills is up for re-election next year, and so is every state legislator. But if Democrats can get on the same page on this, you know, and get on the same page as the governor and come to some sort of an agreement, they can run on whatever plan they come up with. And I can see how a plan like this, if it works, could really boost Mills's reelection chances. You know, I know that she didn't really draw it up this way when she was elected in 2018, but her first term has been dominated by the pandemic. And that means that voters are going to judge her both on the response and the economic recovery. You know, Republicans are already gearing up for that fight to argue that her COVID restrictions were harmful to Maine's economy and businesses. But that argument will have a lot less salience if the economy has fully rebounded a year from now. This plan is an opportunity for Mills to increase the chances of that happening.
Well, let's see. Former Governor LePage and his supporters continue to circle around Maine politics, along with dangling the prospect of a third LePage gubernatorial bid. So, Steve, what's the latest on this front?
LePage has been talking about running since before he even left. I mean, more recently, his allies and the Maine GOP have teased his return, and they've even taken some steps to make sure that he'll have the lion's share of the party's financial support if he does run. And there happens to be a Republican primary, which I think is doubtful. They were ginning up opposition to Governor Mills's offshore wind initiative last week during a protest by Maine fishermen. The Republican Governors Association has been increasingly active in the last few weeks. And while LePage has kept a relatively low profile of late, that seems like it's about to change. He's going to be the featured speaker at the Waldo County GOP's Spring Fling later this month. And I suspect it'll draw quite a decent crowd. And you know, Erwin, I keep wondering how national politics will affect LePage's chances next year if he decides to run. As you know, LePage has allied himself with Donald Trump, who remains a force in the GOP, you know, to the point that those with political aspirations continue to court his blessing and support as he remains sort of holed up in his country club in Mar-a-Lago and continues to claim without evidence that the election was stolen from him.
As you know, Trump has a lot of support among the GOP, but in Maine, at least, Joe Biden won the presidential election. So you kind of wonder whether that association would do a Paul LePage any good in 2022.
That's the question. As you see on the national level right now, there's this leadership dispute in which Liz Cheney of Wyoming, who's a dyed-in-the-wool conservative, is about to be ousted from that position because she's been so outspoken against the former president and his stolen election fallacy that it's become inconvenient for Republicans because they want to put that behind them while also continuing to, you know, show loyalty to the president who keeps talking about it. What I wonder is whether that will have any sort of utility to Democrats next year. The idea that the election was stolen, which is an idea that is rejected by the majority of Democratic voters and independent voters and is only embraced by GOP voters at the moment. I don't know the answer to that, but I do think it's an intriguing question.
Finally, there's the tale of Dr. Christian Northrup, popular for focusing her medical advice on the needs of women. But now, Steve, she's also emerged as a major opponent of COVID-19 vaccine.
Yeah, and I think this has come as quite a shock to a lot of people who once viewed her as a Maine celebrity doctor. This is a person who appeared on Oprah Winfrey's show and was sort of lauded locally and in some cases nationally. But now Northrup is the darling of the anti-vaccination movement, which is in full bloom as public health officials try to convince people to get vaccinated against COVID. Well, those efforts are running headlong into some really pervasive vaccine disinformation. And as it turns out, Northrup is one of the leading purveyors to the point where she was recently banned from Instagram. I mean, she recently attended a conference along QAnon conspiracy theorists and others, was making these just really bizarre and completely discredited claims that the COVID vaccine, you know, contains nanoparticles that are essentially tiny robots with two-way 5G antennas that relay people's biometric data to someone. I'm not really sure who. But, you know, I think it's also important to remember that these kind of claims are being mainstreamed in some corners of the Republican Party. I mean, just last week, several Republican lawmakers, state lawmakers, were standing alongside author Naomi Wolf, who is spouting a lot of the same stuff that Northrop is. But the point is that this stuff is getting mainstreamed. Wolf has been a guest on Tucker Carlson, who has the most watched television program on Fox News. And she was also doing a lot of media hits on conservative radio stations while she was here, while advocating against masks, vaccinations, and other measures designed to limit the spread of COVID. You know, pretty dangerous stuff.
Yeah, and it raises some interesting questions, too, about the continuing changes to the media landscape and kind of what that means.
Well, the full-length podcast and Steve Missler's weekly newsletter are both available at mainepublic.org/pulse. And we'll check in now with Paul Cousins for our weekend weather.
The fields of fair weather clouds that blossomed this afternoon will melt away overnight, for the most part. Quite chilly as well, near freezing or just below in the western mountain valleys to 40 at the shore. The weekend ahead is going to be quite agreeable. Tomorrow, mostly sunny north, partly cloudy for much of the state, becoming overcast down east during the afternoon, and its showers may nick Lubeck at dusk as an ocean storm swings wide, 53 north to 61 interior south. Sunday, milder. We'll enjoy a mix of sun and clouds in every corner of the state, 59 to 64, warmest interior south. Monday, meager low pressure will squirt out into the Gulf of Maine, rain ending across the southern half by midday with partial afternoon clearing. Throughout the majority of the state, light rain will taper to showers during the afternoon, 50s for most, near 60 far south. Tuesday, breezy and cool, mostly cloudy with showers throughout the northern half of Maine, partly sunny across the southern half, 46 to 59 north to south. Temperatures will be moderating later in the week. This is meteorologist Paul Cousins for Maine Public.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Coming up next on Maine Calling on Monday morning at 11, the team will discuss the latest developments in the pandemic. A panel of medical experts will be on hand to answer listener questions. I'm Jennifer Mitchell. Thanks for listening.